Okay, well, I'm going to talk to you about the assessment of EPI capacity in state health departments in the U.S. Survey that was completed mostly at the end of 2013. A few states responded in the beginning of 2014, so this is where that data comes from. This is what I'm going to talk about. There'll be a fair amount of data in each of the categories under 2013 ECA highlights, and then some conclusions at the end. So a little bit of background to the EPI capacity assessments. I think we all understand the importance of epidemiology. One of the earlier groups that articulated this was the Institute of Medicine and the Future of Public Health in 1988, with this statement recognizing that epidemiology is the foundation of all public health functions and essential for the detection, control, and prevention of major public health problems. It then becomes a question, you know, how much EPI capacity do we really need? And the IOM has recommended twice that every health department regularly and systematically collect, analyze, and make available information regarding the health of the community. That doesn't really say anything about numbers or actual function, but that's the basic responsibility. Healthy People 2010 and 2020 aspire to all state and local public health agencies providing or assuring comprehensive epidemiology services to support essential public health services. From the perspective of state and local health departments and CDC, there's sort of some epidemiology planning questions in which it's always good to have some data to bring to. One is, you know, what is the optimal capacity we should strive for, the number of epidemiologists per 100,000 population, for example. In what program areas should I, as a health department, have at least some epidemiology capacity? Is the capacity in my state or local health department in the ballpark of what others have? From a CDC, DHHS perspective, you know, what is the current capacity out there nationally? How many states can carry out the essential public health services? How many states have at least some EPI capacity in selected program areas? And so these are things that CSDB EPI capacity assessment attempts to get some data to help with. There's a long history of CSD and CDC trying to define and build state-level epidemiology capacity. In 2001, even though this history goes way back before 2001, the first of a current series of standardized national EPI capacity assessments, the purpose of which is to assess the EPI capacity in states and assessment of the capacity to perform the 10 essential public health services, or at least the selected ones that are especially epidemiology related. These EPI capacity assessments are also used for baseline and progress assessments for some aspects of Healthy People 2010 and 2020 objectives. And one of the main ones it's been used for is to increase the percentage of states that provide comprehensive EPI services to support the essential public health services. We've had periodic standardized assessments since 2001, including 2004, 2006, 2009, a special enumeration that included local health departments in 2010, and then again the one I'm presenting now. There's four essential public health services that have been deemed dependent on EPI and surveillance capacity. The highlighted words in yellow are the ones I'm going to refer to them by in subsequent slides. The first is to monitor the health status, to identify and solve community problems. The second is diagnose and investigate health problems and hazards. Central Public Health Service number 9, there's a bunch of others in between that even though epidemiology may contribute to, it's deemed that they aren't key, aren't quite as essential from the epidemiology perspective. Evaluate effectiveness, accessibility, and quality of personal and population-based services, and finally, to conduct research for new insights and innovative solutions. A few milestones in EPI capacity building in state health departments. I started as the Connecticut State Epidemiologist in the early mid-1980s and sort of go back that far. There's history before then, but as I've sort of seen it, in the 1980s, there was interest in developing EPI capacity in non-infectious disease areas. Before that, when I first joined CSDE, pretty much everyone was all the state epidemiologists were purely infectious disease epidemiologists. A few were beginning to dabble and getting data to address other health problems, but relatively few. Then the National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion was established in 1988, and then subsequent cooperative agreements came out of that and came out of other areas for non-infectious disease areas after that. In the 1990s, the concept of having multiple state epidemiologists or program area epidemiology leaders began to be established, and CSTE and its meetings began to address more of these problems: infectious disease, chronic disease, MCH, environmental health, occupational health, injury were all sort of deemed potentially separate program areas that should have some of their own specific lead people to plan, to collect data, to meet together, to discuss and continue to develop EPI capacity. And the CSD Executive Committee correspondingly expanded to include representation in specific program areas. Then since 2001, the epidemiology workforce development has been really emphasized as part of EPI capacity building in state health departments. The CSDE membership became open to not just lead epidemiologists in certain areas, but to all applied epidemiologists. The CSD conference you've seen on the slides that Al DiMaria presented, how that's grown. And so part of what CSDE has been doing is really participating very directly in EPI workforce development, in part through this conference, as well as fellowships and other things. So where are we now in 2013, or where were we in 2013, I should say? Well, the objectives of this EPI capacity assessment were to assess current epidemiology capacity and recent trends in core functional EPI capacity. First of all, overall, this provides data for Healthy People 2020 objective 13.3 to increase the proportion of state public health agencies that provide or assure comprehensive EPI services to support the EPHS. The core, and not just overall, but then in key program areas and in surveillance system technology capacity. And then also then to look at the number and training level of state employed epidemiologists, which helps provide data for Healthy People objective 13.1, increase the proportion of state epidemiologists with formal training in epidemiology. We also decided to assess mental health epidemiology capacity for the first time. I can point out that the assessment that I'm doing is talking about a very general EPI capacity assessment. There were very specific EPI capacity assessments carried out of chronic disease, MCH, environmental health, which you're going to hear about, among others, at around the same time. So the methods were that there was an assessment tool developed by a work group with CSTE and executive committee representatives, working from the 2009 EPI capacity assessment. Again, the idea is that it's standardized, so all the core questions have been the same on each ECA. A questionnaire, both a PDF format and online, was sent to each state epidemiologist. And between late August and September 2013, was the official response period. There was also individual worksheets for details on academic and EPI-specific training competencies of each individual epidemiologist in state health departments. If you're here from a local health department, I know some of you are, unfortunately you weren't included in this particular assessment. So this, however, we do recognize that there are about a third of all epidemiologists practicing in state and local government are in local health departments in the country. Just for reference, each state was given the number of epidemiologists reported in 2010, so in case they had changes in the people who were going to be responding to the questionnaire, they had a sense as to how they responded to questions that might be ambiguous before. So results. First of all, we had a 100% response rate of the states and the District of Columbia. This is a feature of CSTE surveys, a lot of arm twisting. often try to achieve 100% response rates, and we're able to do that with this. Those of you who responded to this in the room probably recognize the arm twisting techniques. First, functional capacity. So the main question was, does your state have adequate epidemiology capacity to provide the following, and really each of the following, four essential public health services? each, so there's a response, individual response to each of the four services, measured by a 6-point scale based on the percentage of the activity, knowledge, or resources needed are currently met. That's kind of a little bit of a contorted question, but it's a question that we've the same been asked the same way each one. Ultimately, for analysis purposes, categorized the three highest responses, substantial, almost full to full, which meant you had at least 50% of the capacity, into one group, and minimal to none, meaning you had less than 25% of the capacity, as the other one. And most of the slides will show those two categories. We leave out sort of partial, which is in between. So the this slide shows each of the four essential services, and the percentage of states that say that they have at least substantial and then also less than or equal to minimal capacity. So for monitoring, monitoring and investigating, very high percentages, almost none with only minimal to no capacity. There was one state that had basically been wiped out by administration and budget issues and for a period of time and kind of went to an almost completely vacant, for example, epidemiology office. And then for evaluation and research, pretty low levels of states saying that they really had at least substantial capacity and a notable number that said they had minimal to no capacity to do any evaluation or research. One of the things we did is we tried to look at sort of things that were associated with the responses of having full or minimal, or having at least substantial or having minimal to no capacity. One was state size. So given the two essential services that most states said that they had at least substantial capacity in, it was clear that larger states really had more capacity than smaller states. Not a total surprise, because we're talking about very broad categories that cut across all program areas. So we also asked this for specific program areas. So we asked overall, just what does your health department have overall? That was the previous set of questions. This looked at specific program areas. So what is the extent of epidemiology and surveillance capacity in the following program areas in your state health department? And they were given a list of, and with each one, you'll see the program areas listed in a second. Again, measured by the same 6-point scale and the same two sort of cut points for having at least substantial capacity or minimal to no capacity. I think most of these are fairly straightforward. We're still using the BT emergency response, even though I think public health preparedness is gradually what that term has morphed into over time. But as you can see, infectious disease capacity is really high throughout the country. Public health preparedness is not bad. MCH, chronic disease, environmental health, all have at least 50% of states saying that they have substantial or more capacity. But then you get down to injury, oral health, occupational health, substance abuse, and mental health, and you can see a progressive decrease in the number of states that say that they have, or the percentage of states that say they have at least substantial capacity. One of the things in the 1990s when and early 2000s as capacity in non-infectious disease areas began to be developed in many health departments and grants went out, or cooperative agreement funding went out from CDC to help support capacity building. One of the things of each of the program areas ultimately was decided should really have at least a lead epidemiologist, because having a lead epidemiologist in a program area as opposed to somebody working part-time here or part-time there kind of provides more investment in that area, provides somebody who's going to sort of take responsibility potentially for growing and developing, can meet with other people in other states around the country, represent the state at CSTE much more readily in this area, and potentially that would be enhanced capacity. And indeed, where we see people saying that they have a lead epidemiologist as opposed to no lead epidemiologist identified for that area tend to have much higher levels of capacity than those that don't. This looks at the other side. This looks at the, that was the glass sort of half full. Here's the glass half empty side of things, mostly empty. If you wanted to take a look at the none to minimal category, less than 25%, you get to see a little bit of a breakdown by program area, whether they have at least minimal capacity versus no capacity. And again, you can see that the higher the areas that have more, that tend to have substantial capacity, ID, BT, MCH, chronic disease, and to some extent environmental health, pretty much every state has some capacity at least, even if it's only described as minimal. But then when you start getting into other areas, there are states that have really zero capacity in those areas. Potential areas for growth. Turning to numbers, turning to function from numbers. So altogether, states and the DC reported 2,752 epidemiologists, or 0.87 per 100,000 population, with a range by state of 0.19 to 5.72. By state size, smaller states had more epidemiologists per 100,000 population than larger states. In general, that's not a total surprise. Even though larger states reported more capacity, obviously they have more epidemiologists altogether and can potentially put them in and put and really have very discrete program area staffing. We also tried to get an estimate of what ideal capacity was. Everyone was asked, you know, what would it take to achieve full capacity, to full surveillance and epidemiology capacity in your state. And so when we did that, the states that responded, and we assume those didn't respond, didn't really feel they needed more, which may be, so this may be an underestimate. 1,374 additional epidemiologists were counted, about a 50% increase, which would have taken us up as a nation to 1.3 per 100,000 population epidemiologists based in state health departments. And you can see the same relationship by state size would hold under ideal circumstances too. I'll show you a slide a little bit later on trends and how that's changed or not changed over time. This sort of shows the division of epidemiologists by program area. And you can see that infectious disease, clearly almost 50% of the nation's epidemiology capacity is in infectious disease areas, with followed by chronic disease, MCH, BT, or public health preparedness, environmental health, and then very, very small numbers nationally in oral health, occupational health, substance abuse, and mental health combined. Only 76 total FTE epidemiologists nationwide to cover all those areas based in state health departments. When you take a look at where people identify needs, there are certainly, even though infectious disease is clearly very, very well developed, that's still the leading area in which people felt they needed more capacity, followed by chronic disease, and you can see around those four areas that really had very little capacity. So far, the number of epidemiologists there needed, current imagination is that they could triple to get to where people would want to be. Obviously, that's still relatively small numbers. Numbers that are potentially achievable, if you think about it. A little bit about technological capacity for surveillance. So, knowing that we're in the electronic era and that electronic capacity is important, we also asked a series of questions, sort of general questions about the current state of electronic and other related technological capacities. So you can see the number with established capacity and the additional number with planned capacity for automated electronic laboratory reporting. We're still not there in many states. Expanded number of conditions reportable. If you had electronic laboratory reporting, the number that actually expanded the number because it's so much easier to get large numbers if you're not asking laboratories or clinicians to fill out huge numbers of forms. Web-based provider reporting seems to be something that is not that widely implemented. Collaborating to make the electronic medical record useful for public health purposes is something that almost every state is now participating in, And syndromic surveillance is something that more that close to 80% of states have some capacity for. Then there's a number of other data analysis and response related technological capacities, for example, automated cluster detection software for reportable diseases. Remarkably few states, less than a third, are actually doing that. Automated cluster detection software for syndromic surveillance is much higher. Geocoding of all births, close to 50%. Geocoding of all deaths, similar. That means the other 50% aren't doing that. Geocoding all reportable diseases is something that's a lot are planning on doing, but not that many are doing all yet, and have done some analyses by census tract level SES or area-based SES. A lot of states have done some analyses, even though the routine geocoding seems to be lagging behind that, and use of an outbreak monitoring system. Funding. Key issue here, sources of funding. Basically, most funding is coming from the federal government. Only 19% being of epidemiologists are funded by with state funds. This kind of looks at some busy slide looks at sources of funding for each of the program areas, and you can see in red where state funding is really important or not important, and the blue and white areas represent CDC or other federal funding. A little bit about the workforce. 1,590 or 58% of the enumerated epidemiologists responded to a whole series of competency questions. I'm not going to report on the competencies, but just to sort of reflect the experience of the current workforce. The percentage by epidemiology-specific training, this isn't so different from the previous presenters. MPH is clearly where the majority of epidemiologists is the educational background, at least, but there are a number who are trained through EPI coursework outside of degrees, a few on the job or with no training. Some other data that's in the 2013 ECA is self-assessed competency levels and training needs by four tiers of responsibility, state involvement in training and collaboration with others, barriers to recruitment and attention, salary levels. This is all part of the ECA that's online. I'll leave you the website at the end of this talk. There was also some involvement in some informatics-related questions. Because time is getting short, I'm not going to dwell on this, but just let you look at this. Informatics is clearly something that there's increasing interest in. And then a few trends. You know, how is what I just showed you compare with the previous ECAs? Well, importantly, in 2013, for three of the four Central Public Health Services, we reached the highest functional capacity we've had yet. So very encouraging trends after a big downturn in 2009 in almost all areas. And the percentage of states reporting minimal to no capacity for the other two essential public health services, evaluation and research, is down to their lowest levels so far. Percentage reporting substantial to full EPI capacity in selected program areas is basically up in almost all program areas, except for substance abuse didn't change, very low levels that haven't really changed. But this shows the percentage reporting minimal to no capacity, and the yellow bars are generally the lowest in all the areas. So again, there's been a movement to develop towards getting more capacity in just about every program area. This shows the actual and optimal numbers and rates of epidemiologists from 2004 through 2013. And you can see actually it's been the actual number per 100,000 population were actually at our highest level. Previous high was 2004. The optimal level isn't that much higher than it was estimated to be in 2004, interestingly. This just shows the number of states that had changes. The ones in red are the ones that had drops of more than 10% in the number of epidemiologists from 2010 count to 2013. And on the right are the number who have increases. And interestingly, the number of epidemiologists by program areas has grown in infectious diseases, but the numbers, even though the capacity has grown, the numbers haven't grown. Is this a reflection of training, optimism? I'm not sure. And technology capacity has also increased in just about every area. You know, it's far from optimal in many. It's increased in just about all since 2009. Sources of funding: state funding has decreased as a percentage of all funding, and federal funding has clearly increased. And then from the workforce perspective, the number with only on the job or no training, the percentage, or the number at least of those who reported that back, has gradually been decreasing, which is very encouraging. So a few limitations. This only measured epi capacity of state health departments, as I mentioned before. We know that at least a third of our epi capacity nationally is in local health departments. Some have incredible capacity, like New York City and LA County. Methods used by respondents to estimate their capacity to perform the essential public health services and program specific, and the numbers needed to reach ideal capacity were all self-reported, sort of guesstimated. I didn't show it to you, but there's the definition of epidemiologist who should be counted is pretty complex. It may not have been applied the same way across all states. So a few, in conclusions, a few encouraging trends: highest levels of functional capacity yet in 3 of 4 essential public health services, and fewest with minimal to no capacity in all 4. Highest levels of surveillance and epi capacity yet in most program areas. The largest epi workforce, including the highest number per 100,000 populations documented thus far. Improving surveillance and epi related technology capacity since first measured in 2009. And the lowest percentage of epidemiologists with epi training acquired solely on the job are still lacking any epi training. But there are some areas needing attention. States are increasingly dependent on federal funding. State contribution to supporting epi activities is low and decreasing. Less populous states lag behind larger ones in ability to conduct the 2 most important essential public health services, monitoring health problems and investigating them. The capacity to evaluate programs and conduct epi research, each source of innovation, remains low across most states. And surveillance and epi capacity in at least 4 of 8 long-established program areas continues to be poorly developed in the majority of states. Environmental health, injury, occupational and oral health: nearly a third of states have no occupational or oral health surveillance capacity. Surveillance and epi capacity in substance abuse and mental health is currently very low, with the majority having no capacity. A third of states are still without the ability to receive reports of significant laboratory findings without having to manually enter the data. More than half of states don't routinely geocode vital statistics or reportable disease data. And workforce development efforts contributing to the increasingly formally trained workforce need to be maintained. Something I didn't point out, there's a continued turnover of the workforce estimated to be about at least 10% per year. We asked how many people had left in the past year, and roughly 10% of the workforce had left. Encouraging for those of you who are looking for jobs, but a reality in the need to continue workforce development. And again, I didn't show this data, but 25 to 45% of epidemiologists at all levels report the need for additional competency-specific training. So there were a few broad recommendations that federal, state, and local agencies should work together to develop a strategy to address continued outstanding gaps in epi capacity, and that we really need to address the underdeveloped capacity in mental health, substance abuse, oral health, and occupational health by reaching a consensus on optimal levels and developing a strategy to achieve them, much as was once done with chronic disease and maternal child health, strategy that actually ultimately has been very helpful in the long run. This is just where to find reports of the 2013 ECA. There's an MMWR summarizing some of these findings, and there's a full report on the CST website that's been there for a while. It's not difficult to find. So thank you.